Welcome to the last session of Buddhism in a Nutshell. My name is Donna Cease, and I am the Spiritual Programs Coordinator at Kadampa Center. That just means I'm the person who organizes having classes like this and wonderful class leaders like Sandy here to lead the class. So, I have a couple of things to talk to you about. First of all, it's really wonderful. You'll see up here that today is Losar. It's Tibetan New Year, so it's a very auspicious day to have the last day of your class. This is also the first day in a 15-day period called the Days of Miracles. which have to do with a period in the Buddha's life. It's one of the only times that he did do, you know, miraculous things, and that was to, he was kind of in a showdown with some other teachers who didn't believe in the power of the Dharma. But it's, and, you know, he managed to knock their socks off. But it's a period of time that it's really auspicious to be doing anything spiritual. So congratulations for being here at this time. Since the class is about to end, I wanted to kind of let you know about some other opportunities at Kadampa Center. If you, this class is kind of like the trailer, and we have another course called Discovering Buddhism, and that's the movie. So in a world where you could learn a lot about Dharma, in a world. So DB meets on Monday nights, so if you can work that into your schedule instead of Tuesdays, it's 7 to 8:30. All our evening things happen from 7 to 8:30. And it's a course that will take the topics that you've been skimming over in this class and go into them in a lot more depth. The next topic in Discovering Buddhism is going to be how to meditate, and that will be starting the first part of March. And, you know, they also look into, you know, karma, death and rebirth, all these other topics that are important parts of Buddhism. So, and you're also very lucky because DB is it's a two-year course, and we're just starting the whole series right now. So, you know, if you wanted to start coming to DB, you're getting in on the ground floor. So that's really lucky, although you can come at any time. Also coming up, today is actual Losar. This coming Sunday we'll be celebrating Losar, the Tibetan New Year, here in the Gampa during our 10:30 a.m. regular Sunday session, and there's going to be music and dancing and learning about Tibetan culture and how they celebrate Losar, and there will be this amazing sweet rice and tea and Tibetan cookies, so it'll be a lot of fun. So come for that. In a couple of weeks, we have Venerable Amy Miller coming for a weekend visit, a weekend workshop, and she'll be teaching on a topic that in Tibetan is called Lojong, and it means thought transformation, which is the practice of taking everything that happens to you and turning it into something positive or turning it into part of your practice. And it's a pretty amazing practice. So, and Venerable Amy she's Western, as you can kind of tell by her name. She's a nun, has been ordained for 30 plus years, I think. She comes pretty regularly, and she's got a really good presentation. She's very warm, really makes the Dharma
she's the real one who
and she wrote the book.
She wrote the book for this class.
So thank you, Sandy. One of us is thinking. So that's Friday, February 22nd through Sunday, February 24th. So that's the main things I wanted to tell you about. So do take, oh, yes. You know, we request registration. You're not required to. You can just come, but the registration helps because we'll have printed materials. So you just come. Oh, and I'll mention something else. You guys are a little, you know, this is a little early for this to maybe make sense to you, but one of the things that we do with teachers and with visiting teachers, and this is a practice that they do in Asia, which is we have the opportunity to sponsor them. You might have noticed when you came in the door that there were some notes on the door with people's dedications, and there are people who have already sponsored Venerable Amy, and that's just paying some money to help make her visit possible for us, because we don't charge for any Dharma offerings here at the center. So sponsorship is a wonderful gift to the center, a wonderful gift to the teacher, and a wonderful gift to the other people who come, and it's a wonderful gift to yourself, because when you sponsor a teaching, you're creating the causes to meet the Dharma again, which is, you know, I don't know if you guys have talked about karma yet, but that's one of the really exciting things about karma is it's not just a matter of what happens to us now happens because we're getting paid back for what we did in the past, but the really exciting thing I find about karma is that it's very empowering when we understand it, and it means that we could take actions now that will affect us in the future. So if you find these teachings valuable, then sponsorship is a really powerful practice to do, and you get to write a dedication, and then we'll share it for everybody to kind of share in your intentions when you do sponsorship. So if you get on our website and go look at February 22nd, and then you'll read all about Venerable Amy's visit, and there's also links to do that. And I just gave myself a perfect lead into another thing that I'm here for tonight, because not only is it good for individual students to do practices that help us encounter the Dharma again, but at Kanapa Center, we in leadership feel that's so powerful and so important, and we feel that the teachings are so important that we also practice generosity and sponsorship toward our teachers. And so I have from Kanapa Center a little offering to Sandy to thank her for leading this class. So here you go, my dear.
Thank you.
So that's it.
Enjoy yourself. Okay, so I'm going to jump in on a couple of the things here, because we did talk about karma and how this works and the good karma and bad karma. Okay, everybody tends to think of karma as that negative thing, but there's so much good, okay, your good actions and good intentions. And everything that we do here in Kanapa Center, we do offer the Dharma freely. This money that I was just offered to lead this class is a token. It's not about me expecting anything. It's a token of appreciation from our organization, the leadership in our organization, to me. We do this for all of the teachers, and I believe 100% of us give the money back to Kanapa Center, because this is not why we're doing it. We do it because we love to do it. We do it because we feel that this is important. I swear to you, I'm telling you the truth, that I get more benefit out of leading this class than you all do sitting there. So it's just the way that this generosity works. If you remember, generosity is one of the six perfections, and so it's just how this works. And it's when you start to work with these concepts in Buddhism, and you really start to understand them and you own them, this is where I've talked about that difference between theoretical knowledge and experiential knowledge. It's you really start to feel good about these things and have your intention for why you're doing things. And so this is a beautiful gift that I've received from the center. I'm going to gift it right back to the center. And the other thing I wanted to say is about Venerable Amy. If you do get the chance, please come. If you've gotten even a smidgen of understanding from me, she's light years ahead of me in explaining this stuff, okay? It would be such an immense gift for yourself if you can come. Literally, you can go. She's teaching Friday evening and then all day on Saturday. And so you can, I think it's a bring your own lunch type of thing and hang out. So just read up on the website. And Sunday, she'll be here for the Sunday teaching. You don't have to come for all of it. Just try to find a few hours out of this weekend to really come and see her and meet her. Because again, what Donna was talking about, you're creating the causes and conditions to be able to meet these teachers again in the future, and to have that connection with somebody like Venerable Amy is amazing. So I'm really going to recommend, if you can even just take a few hours, if you can do the whole weekend, phenomenal. if you can only do a little bit, come for a little bit, because she really is amazing. Again, she wrote this, the entire book that this class is based on. And I've talked about that. That book has that CD in the back. I talk way fast. I get that. I get excited, and I start cruising. And I also only have, what, 5 hour and a half, you know, sessions to try to get through an entire book. On that audio CD that she teaches, she's got that beautiful low voice where she just talks slower, and she her meditations. If you have the opportunity to purchase that book and listen to that audio CD, it's truly amazing. So, because I tend to be higher pitched and talk fast, so it just there's a big difference there. Okay, so let's back up and let's get started. Good evening, welcome back to all of you. Is there anybody here for the first time? Okay, so you came into the deep end of the pool. But that's okay, because you're in the deep end of the pool of the little introductory class. So you're going to, as part of it is just going along with it. This is Feb 5, 2019, and this is Session 5 of Buddhism in a Nutshell. And we've got a lot to get through tonight, so I'm going to just go ahead and dive in, and then we'll kind of figure it out as we go. Okay, this is going to be, I'm hoping, a really, really fun night, because it's one of my favorites. And Donna, if you can stick around, you don't have to go. I'm teasing. Go ahead. Say goodnight. No, you don't have to. I was just teasing. So Losar Tashi Dali, everybody. So this is the Tibetan New Year. And Donna explained a little bit about that. It is a very special day. Again, some of those that we talked about with the good karma and the good connections, the fact that you are actually here on this merit-making day is a phenomenal plus to you guys, and you don't even know it. So it's one of those just enjoy, because this is good karma that you're creating just by being here at a Buddhist center, sitting in here, listening to me talk on a merit-making day. So what is merit? We talked about this a little bit. This is the good karma that we create, okay? And so just by sitting here on this very special day, you guys all of a sudden just got bonged with a whole bunch of good stuff, okay? I know you don't get it now, but as you go along, in the future, I guarantee you, if you stick with this at all, you're going to sit, in 2 years from now, you're going to say, you know what, I was sitting in Buddhism in a Nutshell during Losar on that day. You remember these things weirdly. I don't know why. I do. But you'll remember that this was a good day for you, and maybe that's one of those things that can give you a kind of a boost later. Normally, we start the class with a meditation. Tonight, I'm going to start with a video. I love this video. This is part of a commencement speech that was given. Some of you may have seen it. I wasn't able to use it for a long time because it was taken down for proprietary reasons, but I see that it's floating around again, so I'm going to use it again. But this is a phenomenal video, so we're going to start. It's not very long, but this is a commencement speech that was given that I just adore. That is basically one of the things that we've been talking about this whole time, okay? That this everyday life and having this awareness in everyday life and the tools that we can use to increase our awareness in our everyday life. That's really what a lot of this is about. And I've always loved that video. Thoughts from that? Anybody? How many of you have seen that one before? Anybody? Yeah, it's a good one. I just really, really liked that one. So our plan for tonight, how many of you remembered to die? Anybody? We're going to go through all of these things. The summary, we'll go through all of that stuff, but I want to get right to this. I want to know how many of you remembered to die and what that experience was. Are any of you willing to share? I can tell you some of the things that I did. Any of you willing to share your experience when you died one day?
Sandy, can you explain what you mean by die for the newcomers tonight?
Oh, okay. So that's true. I forgot. We have new people. So we did an exercise. I gave everybody homework at the last class that as soon as they could remember, this was Tuesday night, when they woke up Wednesday morning, I want them to think, today I'm going to die. At 5 p.m. I'm going to die. So I have this one day. How would you act during that day? If you thought you were going to die at 5 p.m., what would you do differently? The rules are you still have to go to work. You still have to do your everyday stuff that you would do. But how would you feel, and try to remember throughout the day that if I'm dying today, maybe that coffee tastes a little bit better. Maybe I'll be a little bit nicer. Maybe things will mean a little bit more. Maybe I'll reach out to those that I love. And say, so if you really own this exercise, if you really, really own this exercise, it can change. So I'm curious if people tried to do it. I've had different experiences. I'd never lost a student yet, so people actually didn't. And then how you felt at 5 when you realized that, hey, I'm here for another day. And so I'm just curious. So how many, raise your hand again for how many people did the exercise? And then is anybody willing to share? Okay, let's start over here. Because I've had some very phenomenal and interesting stories told to me over this.
I don't think mine was that phenomenal.
It's okay.
But I think I did consciously go see people and talk to them face-to-face more than I might have done. So it was just little choices. It wasn't, I didn't remember all day that I was going to die. But then I'd think about it, and I'd be like, oh, I should go talk to so-and-so up the hall instead of just email.
Oh, that's a good one, just to go face-to-face rather than just, okay, that's big. Now, how did you feel at 5 when you didn't? Did you have that, okay, oh, I'm still here? Or did you not think of it?
I think I remembered maybe at about 6. Kind of. Yeah.
It's okay.
I thought about it, and I was like, oh, yeah, one more day.
One more day. Anybody else?
So I did. I forgot at 5, but earlier, like early in the day, like you said, I enjoyed my coffee a little bit more. I enjoyed just like getting outside and having like fresh air and, you know, looking at the sky, things like that. I was just felt
very aware.
Yeah, more aware and appreciative, and like thought. I thought, you know, I don't know if. When in the past I've thought about the idea of like, oh, you know, I found out I was dying, like kind of like all the big grandiose like goals I might want to accomplish or whatever, like I wasn't necessarily thinking about that. It was more like moments of awareness that felt like these are the things I appreciate and on a, you know, day to day.
Yeah, this is water, you know. Yeah. Did you remember like 5 or 6 or when did you?
I think I remembered later at night.
Uh-huh.
And I did just have a moment of like, wow, I feel like so lucky that I get to do another
day. Have another day.
Have another day, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We got up here.
So I did not remember to do the assignment, and I totally forgot about it, so you just mentioned. But what happened to me was, as soon as I walked out 1 week ago today, I looked at my phone and a good friend of mine passed away. And, I mean, he was amazing. And when I went to the visitation and everything that was being said, and, you know, funerals are sort of visitations. They're all times of reflection. And what it was what, not what this person accomplished with things, but it was how he made everybody feel. And it really, so I didn't do the exercise, but it was just a further, like, I want to go down with people talking about how I made them feel. Not about my shoes or my car or my blah, 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 whatever.
So. Yeah. So you actually did do the exercise, just in a much deeper, more real way. Anybody else?
Got another one. Huh. First of all, my condolences.
Yeah.
So I know everybody likes taking their car in to the shop, and I had to take mine in on that day. And usually I, you know, give them a large sum of money and leave, like, with my aggression on them. And after giving them a good, you know, $250, I realized that, you know, I wouldn't need that when I was dead. So I kind of just left, like, thanking them. And
oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And feeling okay about it. Like, I'm not going to get it back, but.
But
I
what
don't
an interesting
it.
Way to, yeah. That's really a good, interesting way to look at that, that I have not heard in this exercise before. So.
And they end up giving me a discount.
You know, I know.
That
isn't
nice
that amazing
it.
When you're nice? And yeah, it's different, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know, it's just that hard thing that sometimes, again, we talk about, you know, in the video they did it, and we've talked about that, you know, too, when, you know, I tell you the triggers that I use every day and the things that I try to do. It's, you know, everybody just wants to be happy, and trying to do these little exercises, you know, all the time, so that it helps to increase your awareness. And, you know, the first, when I started with the red light, because I told you this is how I've dealt with it, and it's not thinking that I'm an angry person, but I am an impatient person. So it's trying to do that, and then learning, you know, you have to start somewhere. And so I would actually sit at the red light, and I would start, and I would just, you know, try to say it without sarcasm. Oh, I'm so happy you get to go. Oh, yeah, you get to go too. And, you know, granted, sarcasm was there at the beginning, but slowly to try to do these things, and just like what you just experienced, just being nice about it. They're just doing their jobs, and they're trying to deal with people, and all of a sudden, so if you're nice, and all of a sudden look at what happens, because they're probably not expecting that. They deal
right.
with that the majority of the time.
And they're not trying to take my money, at least not to my awareness.
Yeah. Some do. There's bad people out there, but
especially mechanics.
Yeah, it can be. But it's we try to not generalize and stuff, and we do again. We can't assume everybody is bad. You try to have the wisdom, okay? So there's wisdom that has to come with everything. But just that's a different experience for you. That's a huge. Yeah, I think about that a lot too when I'm dealing with vendors or people that I'm challenged by, or if I'm frustrated. It's a bad situation, and then you just don't want to take it out on that person, you know. So it's trying to figure out the best way to deal with something. But, yeah, that's actually a new one on me for this. That's a goodie. And, yeah, you can't take it with you. So anybody else? Yeah, that can be a very powerful exercise if you, you know, I'll do that one every once in a while. You know, I'll pull that up and just, you know, I will just do things so that I can put myself in that frame of mind. And it's not dwelling on it or being morbid about things, but I try to remember different, you know, that if I'm going to die or, you know, when I've told you I'm a cancer survivor. So I try to pull those memories up, not to dwell, but it keeps me aware of the everyday water of life, because I don't want to just mindlessly go through life. I want to be aware. I want to choose how I'm going to do it. And we have all of these opportunities to do that. So the whole goal of what we've been doing here is to develop the full potential of our minds. So this is kind of a little bit of that review, to develop the full potential of our minds. And the full potential of the human mind is to be able to create that lasting happiness. If you remember, we've talked about happiness, and what does that mean? We've done the history of the Buddha, okay? Just a man, not a god. He had the realization of how life really is, okay? And so since he was just a man, all he could do was teach. He could not get up and say, I want everybody to become enlightened, have all of the positive frames of mind, and get rid of all of the negative. We've talked about all these different things, and we used the Four Noble Truths as our basis for this class. I'm going to try to skip over some things. Part of this is just that eliminating the causes of suffering and fully developing our virtuous qualities, and that is the technical term for enlightenment. And the biggest thing I can say is that one of the teachers actually uses the term, there's no reason to get all holy about it. This is a practice. It is, in its purest sense, Buddhism is not a religion. It is a way of life, a philosophy of the mind. You will have some out there that say it's got all the trappings of religion. Well, fine if you want to look at it like that, but those who practice in its purest sense, it's a way of life. This is Thich Nhat Hanh. He is, if anybody doesn't know who that is, just like the Dalai Lama in Tibetan Buddhism, Thich Nhat Hanh is to Vietnamese Buddhism. And he says, there's a direct quote from him, that there's a misconception that Buddhism is a religion and that you worship Buddha. Buddhism is a practice like yoga. You can be a Christian and practice Buddhism. I met a Catholic priest who lives in a Buddhist monastery in France, and he told me that Buddhism makes him a better Christian. I love that. It is a practice. It is a way of life. And we don't put these teachers or the Buddha or any of these statues and stuff. They're not up on pedestals. We revere them because they have knowledge greater than ours, just like you would anybody. Anything that you're studying. If you're a pianist and you're studying and you want to become a, you know, concert pianist, well, you would revere certain, you know, great piano teachers, right? So it's no different than that. We talked about the Dharma. Does anybody remember what that word meant? The teachings. That which protects. So the actual word is that which protects, and it can be the Dharma, all of the things that are in here, the teachings, all of this, all of these symbols, these prayer flags, this is all Dharma. It also means the things that, those mini enlightenments as we start to understand things. That's also the Dharma. It's kind of that memory of, as we start to get those realizations of what's going on. And Lama Yeshe, the founder of this organization, the FPMT, there's a great quote from him that I'm going to read. The Dharma is anything that causes our delusions, our disturbing thoughts to subside, anything that brings us peace of mind and liberation from confusion and suffering. So it's just as much about what we do in our everyday life. This is a very practical, it's something every day. We try to do this stuff every day. It's not just on the weekends. It's not just on Sundays. It's not just when we're sitting on the mat. It's every day. It's just like this is water. It's every day. We try to bring this into our daily life. The word Kadampa, our center is Kadampa Center. The word Kadampa means those who bring the Buddha's words into everyday practice. Okay, so if we can do this, and again, if we start to learn with the little things that frustrate us or the little things that we need to work on and start trying to find those things that you can do, that will help to trigger this awareness, because how will you ever handle the big things that go on if we can't handle the little things? So that's why it's trying to kind of just do these little practices, these little awarenesses to try to bring that to you, because we don't get this every day. If you guys knew the day I've had today, it was hilarious. Literally, I always wake up about 6 a.m., 7 a.m. I don't even set an alarm. And this morning I woke up to a text that says, oh, I'm going to be late. And I realized it's 10 o'clock. My husband was quiet, and he shut the door to the bedroom, and he let me sleep. And so I literally hit the ground running. From that moment on, I called the lady I was going to meet, and I said, I'm going to give you 3 choices. We can reschedule. You can start driving to me, and we can meet at my house. Or you can just wait, and I'll get there in about a half an hour. Luckily, it was somebody from Kadampa Center, so she was easygoing about it. I probably would not have said that to a client of mine. But it's like on the way there, I'm hitting every single red light. There was some kind of an accident on 55. Everything that was in my way to get there. And I had to laugh because I'd been prepping the night before for this class. And so this is it. This is water. This is what we're living in. And I've had a day like that all day long. I'm drinking decaffeinated coffee because I'm just working on fumes right now, so I'm trying to tease my mind into being awake. But this is our everyday practice. And so this is, rather than getting frustrated about it, you know, which I would have done 10, 15 years ago, I probably would have been completely frazzled. But now it's, what is that going to help? What is that going to do? And so it's trying to work with us all the time. Now the trick is that we're working with our mind on our mind. Okay, we're trying to work on our mind with our mind. So there's your mechanic, so trying to work on a car that's racing down the freeway. That's the analogy of this. So it's not easy. We're talking about this, and these are straightforward steps to do, but it's not easy. So just imagine you're a mechanic trying to work on a car that's racing down the freeway. That is, in essence, what we are trying to do with all of this, and that's what makes this really so challenging. And that's why we have to practice in the way we do and not just read about things and have theoretical knowledge. You really need to have experience and knowledge, because it changes things. It changes how we're doing. So we've been talking, Let's see, now I'm probably going to start skipping around with some of this. The summary, we've talked about these different things, okay, practicing with the little things, the precious human life, the Four Noble Truths, because I've been wrapping this entire class around that Four Noble Truths. We talked about developing our minds to its full enlightenment and what that means. And we've been talking the last few days about compassion, okay, and trying what's renunciation and bodhicitta. And bodhicitta is that altruistic determination to achieve enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings, to relieve their suffering and bring them enlightenment, taking the responsibility ourselves to do that. That sounds so, you know, huge, right? You know, we're just trying to get there ourselves, let alone take care of anybody else. But it's a very powerful state of mind that sometimes, you know, we are all willing to go help other people. And so that's one of those motivations that can help spur us on to learn some of these things. But then it's taking the responsibility for yourself. Now, it's a very motivating state of mind, but this brings us to that equanimity, that meditation that we did at the last week's session, for those of you that were here. So we're challenging this idea that we tend to value other people based on what they do for us. Okay? So we again, this is that word attachment that we've used, where in the English language, attachment we use as kind of a positive word. Okay, I'm very attached to my family. I'm very attached to my husband. In Buddhism, attachment means that we are exaggerating the good qualities and minimizing the bad. And so there's an essence of I, okay? So if I only love my husband, you know, for what he does for me, because he takes such good care of me, if it was true love, I want him to be happy no matter what, even if he's not with me. Even if he's doing something that, you know, I don't want him to do, or things that there's still that love there. If we take the I out of it, this is where we're going to start talking about how to work with some of these words and attachment and disengage. That's the word I'm looking for. Because people say that, well, that you're disengaged. Okay, and they look at that like that's a negative. That means you don't care. When you really start looking at this and working with this more honestly, it's the purest form of love, and it means you care even more. There's much more compassion. There's much more love when that I and that ego is not there. It's actually the opposite of being disengaged. It means that you're not putting yourself first in this. Okay, so again, we're just going to be able to touch on the edges of this stuff, and I'm going to have to move on because we got to get to one of the big ones. Now, again, this doesn't mean that if you're in a bad situation, you're in a bad relationship, get out, okay? This does not mean you put up with, you're not a doormat. Being Buddhist does not mean you're a doormat. If there's a bad relationship, get out of it, okay? That is not what I'm saying at all. There's a complete different thing, because I've had that happen a couple times in class. Don't. If you're in a bad situation, you take care of yourself and you get out. Doesn't mean we don't discriminate. If this group of people is not a good group, if they're doing things that you don't agree with, you know, morally, legally, whatever, then get away. It doesn't mean that you just do things or that you just put up with things. So we still have the ability to discriminate. It just means thinking about things a little bit further and understanding what those relationships are and what they mean and how to work with things. So now we're going to work on, remember we've talked about the two wings of enlightenment. The bird of enlightenment needs two wings to fly. Put my teeth back in. Okay? So compassion and wisdom. You've got to have both. You can't be just nice. You can't be just nice. If you're just nice and that's all you want to do is just be nice and help people, but you don't have the wisdom of truly how to do it, then you'd be like the person giving alcohol to an alcoholic because they want it, right? You just want to give them something. If that's what they want, I'll give it to them. There's no wisdom there. You can't be just smart. You can't be just smart because if you have all of this knowledge but you have no compassion in you, then you're not going to want to help anybody. You just use that knowledge for yourself. So you have to have both, all right? And so today we're going to be working on this other wing, okay? We've used this Four Noble Truths, and we've gotten all the way down to the wisdom of emptiness. Now, before I go there, I'm going to do one quick thing. Have any of you been downloading these papers and stuff on the website? Has anybody worried about that? Just one? Okay, so up on the Canapa Center website, if you're, for those of you that are interested, canapa-center.org, if you go there, you go to spiritual programs, you go to introductory programs, and then you go to Buddhism in a nutshell, there's all of these handouts that have different meditations and different prayers and different things on there. These are most of the things that are on there are things I have covered in class. There's one on there, handout number 6, called The Foundation of All Good Qualities. And I just want to touch on this briefly because different Buddhism in a nutshell class leaders will use this as their format. I use the Four Noble Truths to wrap this class around, but many of the class leaders will use this particular prayer. And this, too, it's the same type of thing, just to let you know, just verse 1 I'll do. The foundation of all good qualities is the kind and venerable guru. Correct devotion to him is the root of the path. By clearly seeing this and applying great effort, please bless me to rely upon him with great respect. So remember we talked about that word teacher and that it means different things in Tibetan Buddhism, because a teacher is not like us, where we'd have a professor in college or, you know, your high school teacher. We use the word teacher just as that person of knowledge that's going to give that information to us. In Buddhism, in Tibetan Buddhism, the teacher has a lot more responsibility for that student. And so the word teacher, we use that very carefully. And the word guru or lama means somebody who's heavy with knowledge. Now, it's also in America, okay, nobody's drinking the Kool-Aid here, all right? That can have kind of funny connotations when you say guru. I guarantee you, if you go into work tomorrow or go talk with your family, say, oh, I met with my guru tonight, they're all going to go, what? It's a different word in Tibetan Buddhism. It means somebody who's heavy with knowledge. And remember, they all have, we have rules. Before you would ask somebody to be your guru or your teacher, they have to have certain qualities. There is a statistic that says that you should study that person for at least 12 years before you ask him to become your teacher. Okay? So there's all these qualifications. You don't just go pull yourself a Tibetan Buddhist teacher. You've got to study them, find out that they have these qualities. Are they worthy of being your teacher? And now also remember, there's a flip side of it. Are you worthy of being the student? Okay, there's a whole list of criteria for you to be a true student to them, and they won't accept. It's you've got to work on this relationship, and so it's understanding that. And again, what there is a class that's Discovering Buddhism where they'll do 6 weeks on just the spiritual guide. We're just skipping over these things, but if you are interested in any of these things, this is the stuff where you can go and talk to somebody and find out a lot more information about that. But I just wanted you to be aware of that, because we're going through all of that information is literally there online, and it's just making sure that you understand what's there and when you can see it. Okay, I'm making sure I'm covering all these points, the things that I went through and figured out what I haven't covered yet. Got it. Okay, now we're going to go into the wisdom of emptiness. And I'm going to watch time. This is the deepest end of the pool. This subject is very challenging. I guarantee you, you are not going to get this in 15 minutes. I guarantee, okay? What I'm hoping to do is just give you a glimpse of it, to be able to peel back a couple of layers of an onion. This is some deep stuff. And I've got some rules with this deep stuff. Okay, what have I got here? I'm into visual aids. I have my emptiness bucket. I got some gardening gloves. I got a pen. Let's put my phone in here for right now. I got some flowers. Okay, this bucket, this is my emptiness bucket. Okay, I'm going to take my phone out. Is the bucket empty? No. Could I say the bucket is empty of phone? Okay? The bucket is empty of phone, but it's not empty. Emptiness is not nothingness. Emptiness is not nothingness. This is not nihilism. Do not throw the baby out with the bathwater. We're going to come at this from many different directions, okay? Emptiness does not mean nothingness. But we could literally say this bucket is empty of phone. Right? So we kind of got that part. Everybody's with me so far, right? Okay. Emptiness, in Sanskrit, shunyata, is the absence or lack of true existence. Ultimately, every phenomenon is empty of existing truly or from its own side or independently. True or inherent existence is also described as intrinsic reality, concrete, independent existence or existing from its own side. This is a quality we instinctively project on ourselves and everything we experience. The belief that things exist from their own side, independence of parts, causes and conditions, or your own mind experiencing them. Through Buddhist teachings and practice, we seek to overcome this false belief and to ultimately develop the ability to see things as they actually exist. So, now we're going to start trying to break that down. What is this? A flower. Tell me when it stops being a flower. Still a flower? Still a flower? Still a flower? Is this still a flower? No. What is it? What is this? Parts, a petal, stem. So everything exists. Is this one going to work? I should have. Jump to I'm jumping around, but we're going to go for it. Okay. So everything exists because this one doesn't work either. Causes and conditions. Parts and a labeling mind. There isn't anything that exists from its own side. There's nothing permanent. There's nothing permanent. Well, we tend to think everything is permanent. Everything exists through this. Can you think of anything that doesn't? I'm going to just come at this from all kinds of different sides to keep, okay? So everything exists. This flower, what needed to happen to make this flower a flower? A seed, dirt, food. That's coming. So let's say here, that's part of it, okay? So the water, these are causes and conditions, right? You've got your seed, you've got your water, you've got your sunlight, you've got your food. So we've got all the parts that grow, okay, that become this, and then we labeled it flower. We labeled it flower. Okay? We here in America labeled this flower. Those are all the labels for the word flower in different countries. Okay, if somebody walked up to you and said, "Sibidit," you wouldn't know what that meant. Okay, I had to look all these things up, okay, just to find it. These are words, these are mere labels. If somebody walked up to you and said one of those words to you, you wouldn't know that that meant flower. These are just the labels. We just give these things labels. We have to label things because we have to communicate. So we have this conventional existence, right? There is something there. There is a table there. Okay? There is a table there. But what is that table? How did that table come into existence? There was a tree. Somebody planted the tree. I mean, we could take this all the way back, but somebody planted this tree. Somebody cut this tree down. Some woodworker created this table, right? There's your causes and conditions. We've got all the parts. That thing can come apart, right? And then we labeled it table or desk, right? Okay? If that was, is that permanent? If that was permanent, can that exist from its own side? If that was permanent, then that table would be a table to every sentient mind. This is, it's like I said, we're going to come at this from different things. So feel free to raise your hand and ask your questions. If that thing was permanent from its own side, then every single sentient mind would know that that's a table. Okay? That means it's permanent. It exists on it from its own side.
Could you repeat the question?
Oh, the question is, what do you mean by from its own side? Okay? So this is where we're trying to separate from how do things really exist. Is that permanent? If that was a permanent thing where it was an object that was created from its own side, okay, not from my mind, not from your mind, but on its own, not from your mind, not from any of your minds, okay? This thing exists permanently on its own without our minds labeling it, without all the parts and conditions, from its own side, so a permanent thing. Again, this is part of what's so hard. So we're just going to come at this, and I'm just going to keep talking, keep asking your questions. If this flower was permanent, so it comes into an existence and then it dies, right? It comes into existence and then it dies. Whether it's somebody picks it and it dies, whether it just, you know, dies from the weather or something, so it comes into existence and then it's gone. That table came into an existence and now it's going away, right? This cushion, this chair, anything, anything comes into existence and then it goes away, right? So there's nothing, but we tend to look at everything like it's permanent. Okay, so there's part of it. It comes into existence and then it goes away. Okay, so that's part of it. Okay, so if this, what is, to this is a flower. What is this to a bee?
Food.
Okay, what is this to a dog? Something to dig up. So all these different sentient minds, not just human minds, remember we're talking about all sentient minds. If this flower was what we think of as a flower, that's a flower. It smells pretty. It's got all of the labels that we put on it. But to a bee, that's dinner. If it was a permanent thing, then it would be the exact same thing for every sentient mind who sees it or experiences it, maybe a better way to put it. Again, you're not going to get this in the first class. It's just a little bit of layers. Okay, we tend to think of ourselves as permanent. Okay, if I gave each of you a piece of paper, if I gave each of you a piece of paper and I asked you to write 10 things about Sandy, write 10 things about Sandy from just your experience of the last few weeks, there would be a lot of the similar things, okay, female, white, brunette, okay, but some of you may look at things chubby, skinny, depends on who's looking, what your perception is, nice or not nice, okay? So depending on what your perception is and your history is, you put all of these things on me, okay? Because I'm different for each of you. Have you ever had that experience of that you're sitting talking with somebody and say, oh, you know, I really like that Barb, you know, she's a great person. You really? I don't like her at all. If she was permanent, she'd be the same thing to everybody. Okay, so just your perception of me, okay? Think of all these labels. I could sit here on a chair with a blank whiteboard and y'all could start putting these things down. You know, American, white, you know, whatever. These are just labels that you are putting on me, okay? I might not like some of those labels. I might not agree with some of those labels. So Sandy, where is Sandy, okay? Where is Sandy? Is Sandy, what piece? Could you point at a part that is Sandy? Not just this person, you know? If you tried to take me apart, I'm causes and conditions, okay? I came from, conventionally, the egg and the sperm, my mom and dad getting together, come from my mom and dad, the raising that I have, my causes and conditions, the parts, I've got arms, I've got fingers, I've got toes, I've got blood, I've got a label in mind. I could have come in here and said, my name's Betty. Y'all would go with that, right? Because it's a label. See how meaningless these labels can be. They're a way to communicate conventionally. But ultimately, there's no Sandy. Where's Sandy? Can you sit and point to where's, you know, is this Sandy? Is this Sandy? You know, how do we work with this? And so to think about these things, the emptiness of things, not nothingness, emptiness of things. It's like we have this present and we put this wrapping paper on it, but we make the wrapping paper as part of the gift instead of just a covering. I know. This is not easy stuff. This is not easy stuff. Right here. This is not easy stuff. You will not. It's just a peek at it.
So, I think you've talked about this before, but are you your mind or are you separate from your mind? If that's...
So?
Like, what's reincarnated? Are you reincarnated or is it your mind? And
okay. So, let's talk about that a little bit again. That's good. These are good questions. Okay. So... The physical part of this body in front is the brain, okay? The brain and the mind are two separate things. So this incarnation that's in front of you, okay, I was born, I am Sandy, okay? When Sandy dies, then what moves on is what you're asking. So this is where we have, remember we talked about those different levels of mind? That little third most subtle nature, that little seed, I guess we'd call it, just for want of something. So that pure nature of the mind, that moves on. Okay? None of the things about Sandy. This is not Sandy being reincarnated. Okay? That's Hinduism. That's a different thing. In Buddhism, this Buddha nature, this pure, clear mind goes. All of the karma that I've created in the past lives has created both good and bad, goes with it. And that actually helps to propel it, right? So if I've been good and trying to do things, maybe I'll be born in a positive life. Remember those karma things about what kind of world would you be born in? What kind of family would you be born in? Will I be a man, a woman, an insect, a dog? Okay. But it's that pure, pure mind. And why is that empowering? Why is the fact that Sandy is not reincarnated empowering to me? Okay, Sandy's not perfect. I have a lot of foibles and stuff. I'm a fairly nice person, but I'm certainly not perfect. I'm not a Buddha. Okay, so the fact that I have this chance, again, for me it's like that environmental message. Okay, I want to take care of the planet to be able to pass it off to those behind me, especially because I'm a grandma again. Okay, so it's that pure nature. So I'm the bearer of this mind. I'm currently the bearer of this mind. And this is me trying to do the best that I can so that I'm helping that mind to go forward in its purest sense, if I can, with the most positive. Try to get rid of the negative and focus on the positive. Okay, so it's that pure, clear nature of the mind that moves forward, that most subtle mind. It's not the brain, it's not a physical thing, and it's not Sandy. That next life, that's not going to be Sandy as a dog. Or a cat, or another person, okay? That's going to be a totally fresh start depending on what the karma is. And I find that empowering. Because if it's just that soul type of thing, okay, where it's Sandy moving on, Sandy's got a lot of baggage, okay? So I'm hoping that that gets... Does that make sense? Okay.
So Buddhist philosophy is about impermanence.
Impermanence.
What is permanent in Buddhist philosophy?
Nothing.
The Buddha, the mind.
So things, okay? Things, concepts aren't, because we're talking really more about things, okay? The Buddha was not permanent. He was a man. He died. Okay? Now, it's his pure Buddha nature, okay? He can be reincarnated. Okay? Reincarnation is not the word I like to use. Rebirth. Because reincarnation is a different meaning, right? So let's use the word rebirth. In Buddhism, it would be rebirth, not reincarnation, rebirth. There's a difference there, okay? So the Buddha was a man. Okay? So not permanent. Nothing. But we go through our lives thinking that things are permanent. That's why we tend to get so upset when things go wrong or when things fade or things go away. So it's that grabbing onto things that are going to change. There's nobody in this class that is going to live, right? We're all going to die someday, but we try to ignore that. What about relationships or things? You know, my car, my flower. I just destroyed my flower, you know. So it is all about impermanence. Everything is impermanence. Everything will come into existence and fade away.
Including the pure mind.
Not the pure mind. That's the only one. So that's the thing that will go, because that is beginningless and endless. Very few people get that right off the bat. Yes, sir. Chris Scott.
Thank you. Who's the guy that speaks on Mondays right now?
Robbie Watkins.
I think he mentioned the empty space. Was it permanence?
Yep.
I can't remember anything else, but I think that he said that was one of the permanences.
Yeah. Chris? Yes. So.
But that's kind of an exception to this, because there aren't any parts, so it's not a real thing.
Yeah, so this is now...
Because I've heard, let me tell one more
Go
thing.
For it.
I heard at one time somebody say that emptiness, this quality that Sandy's been describing for the past couple minutes, that's permanent. No, it's not, because it's not made up of parts. It's not causing conditions. It's just a quality. It's not a thing. So
yeah.
It can't be impermanent, because there's nothing there to be permanent. It's just a quality.
Quality.
Right.
So this is where you can get real existential.
Right. It's kind of a... Not a plan word, but the way the words are used in Buddhism.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's true. And space, so it is that
space between atoms, or even between the parts of an atom, again.
And the more science discovers.
There, right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And so this is where it's we can say, and the Dalai Lama even talks about this, okay? Because as science is progressing, and we can see, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, we didn't have quantum physics. We didn't know what a black hole, and that there was something there. So science is continually advancing. The space in between atoms, they now can define it. So it's kind of what we can see and understand right now, but science is going to change. There was something I read in Science Right Now that is talking about the universe is sentient. I was just reading an article that there's a scientist that is now claiming that the universe is a sentient mind. So who knows where science is going to take us. But right now, with what we understand right now, the way that we would talk about it now is that Buddha nature is permanent. Once you reach that enlightenment, that Buddha nature, it's that is gone. You will stay there. You can't fall back and become unaware again, okay? So once you reach that point, that's a permanent state of existence, okay? And then space, the empty space in between things, from what we know right now, scientifically right now. But even the Dalai Lama says if science discovers a difference, then Buddhism has to change. But what they're actually discovering is that the more science is discovering, the more they're realizing that some of the Buddha's teachings from 800 years ago are correct. The Tibetan Buddhist meditators, whenever you read anything on meditation and stuff, they're pretty much studying the Tibetan Buddhist meditators. When they put all those electrodes and stuff on there and do that, those are 99% of the time they're working with somebody that's in Tibetan Buddhism meditation. And so they're discovering how the neuroplasticity of your physical brain can be changed through your mental thoughts. You can reprogram your brain. It's scientifically proven now. that you can work the neuroplasticity of your physical brain can be changed through your mind. Okay. So, yes, sir.
My thought was, as it relates to impermanence, the way that I have tried to relate to or have sort of grasped at an understanding of impermanence was that, you know, if you define me as a redhead now, that's not permanent. You know, 50 years from now, I won't be a redhead. I'll have white hair or no hair. You know, and I've related it to kind of the pursuit of happiness, and that if all you want to do is become a doctor and you achieve that goal, you won't be able to continue to still be a doctor when you're 100 and you can no longer perform surgeries. You know, whatever that thing that is a pursuit of, that is the thing that you're pursuing for your happiness is not permanent. If all you want to do is buy a Porsche 911, that Porsche 911 will not always run. That fancy car will not always be running. Somebody will take all your money and then eventually it'll stop running. You know, if there is if you are young and in love with your high school sweetheart, you know, you may find that 20 years from now they are a different person and you are a different person, and so that is impermanent. And so if you put all of your kind of efforts and thoughts and happiness into any of these objects that are in the world today, they're all not going to be here, and they're all not going to be the cause of your happiness. So you need to find another thing to cause that happiness, and it's not any of these impermanent things in the world today.
Yeah, it's where are we looking for? So first is defining happiness, and you know, what is that? I think we tend to, in our Western world, we tend to think of pleasure as happiness. Okay, pleasure and happiness. But pleasure is, you know, momentary. Okay, if happiness really wasn't that chocolate cake, then the first piece of chocolate cake is phenomenal. Second piece, I'm still pretty happy. Third piece, fourth piece, fifth piece, by that eighth piece of chocolate cake, I'm not happy anymore. Or what about somebody that's allergic to chocolate cake? So again, what is happiness, and what is that, and where do you look for happiness? And this is what he's going to, is that it's not these outward things. Although they're pleasurable, that's not true happiness. So part of it is you defining for yourself what is that happiness, being content with what you have, always wanting what you don't have. You know, so it's trying to work with this stuff and defining what is it. Is it freedom from suffering? That's where a lot of people will go. If I, the freedom from suffering, and suffering, remember that word dukkha. So we do redefine suffering, because suffering in just our Western world means, you know, oh, I broke my leg, or I have this, I've got this problem. But suffering in a Tibetan Buddhist aspect, we use the word dukkha, which has many more levels to suffering, mental suffering, as well as the physical suffering. So it's where are we looking? And then if we start to understand emptiness a little bit more, start to understand not nothingness, the emptiness of things, when we see things as they truly are, when we see things as they truly are, we have a better chance at finding that inner happiness and that enlightenment. When we can truly see things as they are, and that's that wisdom of emptiness. And again, we're never going to get this. I'm just trying to get that first glimmer of things. What is it that we see that we think is so permanent? Okay, just a tip. Like I said, the biggest thing is this is now empty as phone. You know, so it's not nothingness. It's that the emptiness of that person. Try to work on those things. Try to, just like you did in the video, make up those stories that are more positive. We tend to go negative with so much, oh, that speeder that just, you know, cut you off. You know, instead of, you know, and then understand your terminology, understand your words. Oh, that guy's a jerk. Okay? It's like, no, he's acting like a jerk. He's not a jerk. We should start using language that we really mean. Instead of, you know, oh, I'm angry. Well, you know, you're actually not angry. You may be feeling angry. You may be feeling tired, but you are not those things. You are not those things. You have the choice of what you want to be. So that just even your language of how you talk about these things will help you to become them. Right? I want to become a kinder person. You're not an angry person. You may be feeling angry at this moment. So start even thinking about things in a different way. Okay? And again, that it's, if you start thinking about the language and how we use it and how do we communicate and start separating out from these things, you start to see it's that acorn is not really an acorn. That's a potential oak tree. It's not a pear tree. It's not an apple tree. That's a potential oak tree. All of you people in here are not just human beings. You are potential Buddhas. If we start realizing and thinking of things that way, then you start to see things differently, and then you start to understand things differently. You'll start to act a little bit differently. You start to work with karma and understanding good karma, bad karma, all those things. You start thinking about everything you do every day makes a difference. It has an effect. Everything you do, everything you think, everything you say, you are creating karma. And it's your choice if it's good karma or it's bad karma. You have the power. This is such an empowering thing. You have the power. And so if you understand karma, you understand some of these things, and you get a glimpse of what emptiness, what that means, then you have that first opening of that door of understanding how to be a little bit happier, nicer person. Because that's really what it's about. Everybody in this room, that's all we want. We all want to be happier. Everybody in this room just wants to be happier. Kind of makes sense a little bit? Again, that's a tough subject. That's a tough one. Yes. All the way over.
The first day of class, somebody mentioned the book, The Eight Pillars of Joy.
Yeah.
That was written by Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama. And I think that book says so much about happiness, because I have found that you can't find happiness, but what you can work on is cultivating yourself so that joy finds you. And looking at those pillars, and I don't remember all of them, they were like compassion, generosity, forgiveness, and treating those just like you go to a gym and work out. Like, are you exercising and really practicing forgiveness? Are you exercising and really practicing compassion? And by really trying to find what pieces am I maybe not exercising, and then trying to work at exercising them, that joy and happiness kind of just kind of seep into your world. So I love that book, if anybody hasn't read that.
Yeah, they've written a couple of books. The Book of Joy is another really, really good one. And, again, what I like about those books in particular is because, this is not about religion. It's about a way of life. So it's just trying to work on those things. We've got a few minutes. I'm going to stop here because I want to do a meditation from this book, How to Meditate. Because we've done the concentration meditation and we did the one analytical meditation, I want to do another analytical that I like. And that, again, the meditation is the learning to work with your mind. So that's the basic tool of Buddhism, is your mind. And so learning how to work with it and how to do the things that we want to change our minds, how do we do some of this stuff? So if you guys are up for that, or we can keep talking, because we've only got literally 10 minutes. Does anybody have any? Let's do this. I'll open this up. Do y'all have any questions about anything? Not just what you've heard in the class? Anything? I'm just going to open this wide up, okay? Not just about this class. If you've got any questions.
Why is Tibetan Buddhism so bright and floral?
Okay, so you've got, yes. Tibetan Buddhism is all about the bling, okay? It is totally all about the bling. Now, there's a couple of different answers for that. One of them that I've heard is that where's Tibet? It's on a high plateau, And there's not a lot of color there for a lot of the time because it's in that gray winter type of thing. So they like very much the bright. They bring in a lot of the bright culturally. They bring in a lot of the bright colors and stuff in their symbolism. Okay, and all of these colors mean something. All of these colors mean something. All of this stuff, like I said, it's about the bling. The blingier, the better in Tibetan Buddhism. And it's very interesting because Zen, you know, is very serene. So it's just different ways to work with the mind and what works. Yes, sir?
Yeah. Sandy's been to India to see not monasteries, but Gompas over there. And this place is...
This is tame.
This is like a white room compared
to... Yeah, this is tame.
Every square inch of all the walls will be covered with stuff.
Something, yeah. This is, I mean, to have a blank wall or blank space on the wall, this is very tame. This is very tame. Now, I saw you guys up here earlier looking at the altar. If you guys have questions, if you want to come up, like I said, we basically have covered everything that we wanted to. I'm just going to go right there. Yeah, these are all just the, let me do this. Okay, so Donna talked about what's going on, what's next, and she talked about the different classes. Wednesday nights, Geshe Gelug teaches Lam Rim. Okay, that's a little bit challenging. Some of it's stuff that can be a little bit the deep end of the pool, depending on what he's talking about. But to just start going, don't be afraid to go. When I first came here, I went to everything. I went to everything because I was so curious about it all that I went to everything, whether I knew what was going on in that class. And there were times I sat there and I have no clue what they're talking about. But I would listen and then I would read because I did a lot of reading. So I would start to recognize the words. If there was a concept I didn't understand, I built that bookcase in my head and I just stuck it up there. We have so many different things going on. It's like a supermarket. You just have to check it out and see what interests you. We have pujas, which is a prayer meeting. So again, I'll tell you honestly, the first couple of times when I went to pujas back in the beginning, it was like, I'm not kidding. I went in, I sat down, and it's this prayer meeting, and we're reading these prayers. And I was at that point where I'm looking ahead like, how many more pages are we doing? And it was like, because I totally didn't get it. It was not my thing at the beginning. But whenever I try something new, I will try several times before I judge whether this is going to work for me or not. Okay? I do try to stay open-minded and give it a try. And I found that once I kept going, there's different types of pujas. And once I went to several of them often enough that I actually started understanding the words and following it, and then I realized I do like this. There's one specifically called a Medicine Buddha Puja, which is all about health. As a cancer survivor, that touched me. And the way to think about these prayer meetings, it's just like that whisk room. One voice, one piece of whisk trying to sweep this room is not going to do anything. You put a whole bunch together and you create a broom and you can move things. But there's opportunities for more learning from a lot more advanced teachers than me. The Sunday teachings, this Sunday is going to be a big day, so it won't be a regular teaching. How many of you have ever come to the Sunday teachings before? Okay, so I don't need to explain that. Geshe Gelug teaches those, and he is phenomenal. So if you get a chance to meet a real teacher, you know, that makes a big difference. Venerable Amy Miller, like I said, she's phenomenal. Check her out. The next Discovering Buddhism, so some of you were interested in meditation. Normally this class alternates with how to meditate. And the next How to Meditate class is going to be during the day. So if you can't make that during the day, then that's okay, because starting in March, the next Discovering Buddhism module will be How to Meditate. Chris, do we know who's teaching that? Is it Steve? Everybody's good. Everybody's good. But Stephanie Smith, if she teaches, definitely go. She's really good. And she's got a way of kind of leading things that is just phenomenal for me. Everybody's different and everybody's attracted to different teachers. And that's kind of the way we set up Kadampa Center, so that you can try, you know, so you could come to another Buddhism and Nesho class that somebody else leads and you might get something totally different. Okay, so I always recommend going and trying the same class just with a different class leader because you might get something different. They're going to explain something better than I did, or just do it differently to where it gets, you know, into your...
David Maclis is good with meditation, too.
David Maclis is very good with meditation. So we've got some great, great class leaders. So just check that out. The dinner's at 6 every Saturday night. We're up at Aladdin's Eatery in North Hills. There's a group of us that just go up there and hang out and talk. Okay, so every Saturday night at 6 p.m., you're responsible for your own meal. But we've got a group that goes up there. There might be 4 people. There might be 40 people. But we just go and we hang out. There's different, you know, people there all the time. So feel free to come, because that's where having more conversation with people might be beneficial. There's a lot of people that can explain things, like I said, a lot better than I can. So check them out. Generosity, I'm hoping that this class is of benefit to you. And so we do this all for free. If you want to make a donation, there's boxes outside. It helps us keep the lights on, because we don't charge anything for any of the Dharma. Out of 176, I'm not sure how many there are now, we have been the only model that has done it this way, and we're still here. We've been here for over 25 years, and we've never charged for the Dharma. And it's amazing. It's amazing. Do we come sometimes where we're a little tight and we're struggling to pay that heat bill and this light? Oh, we've come to it. But we don't want to charge for the Dharma. So we've done this just on a basis of generosity, and that's amazing. I think some other centers worldwide are starting to try this model. So I'm hoping that we can continue this, because as we grow, it's been working. You know, like I say, it gets a little tight sometimes, but... what else? If anybody wants to stay, question.
This is a very, a mechanical question.
Go for it.
But you're talking about the pujas.
Yeah.
Reminded me, because they are talking so fast. And so that just reminded me. So some of the mantras,
mm-hmm.
like when you're just saying your mantras on your beads. So we have little tunes that go with the mantras.
Yes.
Are you supposed to be doing the tune in your head? Or I've seen, I've looked up how to pronounce other mantras, and they'll be da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, am I going for speed, or am I going for sing-song?
This is an excellent question. Like I said, let's just open this wide open. I'm going to tell you an old Chinese proverb with that. So this young student who had been in this monastery and just was very advanced, he'd learned all this stuff, and he was so excited to go out and teach the world and to do all of these things. And so he went out, but he'd heard about this one old hermit monk that lived on this island that supposedly had all of this knowledge, right? And so this young student, you know, graduated, left the monastery, went to find this old monk, you know, and he rowed his boat over there and got to this island, and there sits this monk, and he starts talking to this monk. And this monk is, you know, not saying the words right. He's not doing. The student is going boy, you really don't know how to say that, right? And the old monk goes, no, I don't. Please enlighten me. Help me to do this. And so this young student was telling him how to say a mantra. And the young student left thinking, oh, okay, I helped this old monk. You know, I'm so smart. And so he's rowing his boat back, and all of a sudden the monk comes running across the water and says, you know, I didn't get that last word. What was that? And it was that realization of, you know, wow, this monk is walking on water, right? So the first thing to say is that it's all about your intention and your mind. Yes, you want to get the pronunciation as good as possible, because you're trying to do something pure, but you do the best you can, okay? And everybody does it differently. A mala is just an abacus. It is just a counter. There is nothing holy about this. It's a counter. It's a way to keep track of things, okay? And everybody will do it differently. There's prayers that we do, and there's prayers that we say, and some can do them really fast because they've been doing them for a long time. Some can be doing them slow. Sometimes when you're doing them slow, you've got more meaning to it. So, again, this is about your mind, not anybody else's. So it's pick the mantra that feels good to you and then recite it, and then you're counting as you're doing it. But the pronunciation, do you know which one you were?
I can't remember. It might have been even the medicine Buddha.
Sayatam bekanse maha bekanse rajasamagate soha.
Right.
Okay.
So I didn't know if I was going for as many as I can say, or am I going for as well as I can say it? Or
well, so just
you're
thinking about it.
You're going for it helping your mind.
That's right. You're going for it helping thing. Your mind.
You could say every word wrong, and if it still helps your mind, it will still help you.
Yeah.
You know?
So
that's the most important
thing. That's it. That's the most important thing.
And I find if I say the Mani mantra really slow, it really calms my mind. So a lot of times I say that really, Om Mani Padme Hum. Yeah, we say it every week. So,
yeah.
But a lot of times, like if my mind is distressed, and I mean, one of the purposes of doing these exercises is to keep a happy mind. And if your mind is occupied doing those mantras, then your mind is more peaceful. It's not being distracted by the negative. And so if I slow it down and just say it really, really slow in my head, then it calms me right down.
The definition of mantra is mind protector. The definition of mantra is mind protector. And that's what it is. It's how do you protect your mind. And so when I get stressed, I'll say mantras, you know. So it's you're doing different practices, but just like Chris says, bottom line, it's got to be beneficial to your mind. If you're worried about it, if you're worried about saying it right, you're not concentrating on what it should be about.
There's a corollary with meditation, too. We don't meditate to become good meditators. We meditate to calm our minds.
Yeah.
That's all it's about.
That's all of this is about. Because I'll open this wide up. If anybody, I mean, we can stop class. I can give a Gompa tour if you want. It's just ask your questions. This has just been a safe place for you to do that. And I'm just so appreciative of everybody coming and spending their, you know, time with me for the last 5 weeks. And even though those that came for the first time. I'm glad you actually came. It's hard to take that first step sometimes. You know, I know we didn't get to cover everything. I know it's hard subjects that just sometimes I can create more confusion. But it's just keep at it. And then slowly it's the glimpses of it. You know, it's just trying to work, you're learning to work with your mind. So.
In that place. Okay.
Okay.
I was having a hard time with this whole emptiness thing. I could not even get the first glimmer about what this was about. And my wife, she looks at me and goes, start with this. There are no partless parts. And that just opened up the whole understanding of what I have. You know, that's a good place to start. You know, everything is made up of parts, even the parts themselves. You know, you just got to find ways to get under these ideas and go until it helps your mind. Yeah.
And why is it so important to understand emptiness? Because if it helps you see things as they truly are, then that it's all of those things that we talked about with the Four Noble Truths. Okay, if you can't define the problem and understand these what's causing this, and then getting to how empty, literally how empty so much of this is. We get so upset at so many things that are just not there. Because we're not seeing things as they truly exist, and that we get so upset over that. So when you start to work with this, and you realize that that's just not there, or you know, it's just starting to work with this stuff again as much as you can during the day, and using these tools, because it is for me, it's very helpful, and I've seen a huge difference, and it's just learning to work with these tools. So this is weird. 3 minutes every class. I always try to start on time and end on time. We don't need to do a meditation. They're all in the book. They're in the handouts. If anybody has any questions, let me know. If anybody wants to stick around, if you've got any more questions, you know, thank you all for coming. I truly appreciate you spending all of this time with me. So have an awesome, wonderful night. It's beautiful outside. I can't believe this time goes. And thanks to Chris and Hetty for doing all of the setups all the time. This is very amazing. All volunteers.